Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by Witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
And good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're at in the world today. And it could be anywhere in the world as we talk and reach out to 212 countries on a regular basis. I'm your host, Ed Carell. I know I wasn't supposed to be here, but I don't know. The calls for me to return have been so high that I came in for another week. And this week we're going to start out talking about Think Like a Pagan. Now, this is a Heartland Pagan Festival. Kind of got me thinking about it. And I've been teaching classes for a couple of months on how to think like a pagan. And it's more in the form of personal coaching that I've been doing. I've been doing a lot of personal coaching for pagans all over the United States, actually, surprisingly. And I've been helping them. And part of it is, like, they want to attach to the audience. They want to attach to their people that they're speaking to. They're trying to be more part of what they're doing. And so they want to think, you know, they go, well, what do you mean, think like a pagan? What do you mean by that? Well, pagans technically don't think like Christians. We use the same brains. Or do we? And we know things about our brains that most people don't understand. Like, there's neuroplasticity, means our brains are constantly evolving. What parts of the brains we use, we strengthen. What parts we don't use, we atrophy. It's a very important part. That in our lives, our experiences create our opportunities. Our experiences create these sort of batteries in our mind, these sort of channels, most important channels, in which our energy flows down to. And you know the rules about magic. Wherever your attention goes, the magic flows. And in your brain, the rule is where your attention goes, the neurons flow. So that's a very important, distinct part. So how you think is a very distinct part of how your brain functions. And how your brain functions is how you use it. And that, most people don't realize, is kind of important. And it's personal, and it's special, and it's like a fingerprint. Each person is unique. But we have some very common attributes. So the first thing about thinking like a pagan is to understand that the human brain works out of fear. Absolute fear. And if you're working out of fear, then it's really hard to think about other things, but we do. We all work out of fear. It is part of our programming. And what do I mean by that? Well, we have amygdala, which is a very important part of our brain, and its job was to say, okay, I'm sitting out here in the middle of the field, and oh my God, I just heard a noise, a rustle in the woods, the rustle in the thing. Oh my God, that looks like a tiger or a lion or a bear. I must run, hide, or fight. Yep, and that is what it is. And even if you calm yourself down, that amygdala is going, well, what's out there? What's happening? It's always going to be on the search for what the dangers are, what things threaten us. And so we go, okay, there's no lions in there. I live in a secure house. Right now, the chances of me being eaten by a lion are pretty unlikely since there's no lions near me. It'd be a very strange set of circumstances for me to actually be eaten by a lion right now. Not saying it couldn't happen, but I don't know how it would happen. So there you go. So that's part of the idea of it. But my mind still looking for that lion, even if it doesn't know it's there. Because it says, well, just because you don't think it's there doesn't mean it's not there. That's right. And so it's always looking for these dangers. And, of course, you can take a look at cars driving. You know, I'm a pedestrian, so I walk a lot. And cars are like my lions and tigers and bears. And they threaten me, and they try to do so. So when I'm on the street, I'm always very aware of cars. And that builds patterns into my brain, and I'm like, wow. And it keeps me from being hit. At the end of the day, the good news is I don't get hit. Hopefully, it continues that way. But so far, I've only been hit once in my life. scared the bejesus out of me, and I really thought I was going to die. So that was very important to me. And what it was is I wasn't paying attention, and it taught me to be pay more attention. My amygdala stopped it. So one of the first things about thinking about pagan is realize you're going to have a biological thing called fear, and you have to decide what it is that you like or don't like. What are you willing to fight for it? Are you going to do anything about it? And so you have to understand the ideas of it. So your fear is the first step. So what is the fear of a pagan? Well, it is less of the fear of the lion, and it's less of the fear of the unknown. In fact, it's about turning that fear into enthusiasm, because if you can learn about fear, man, but if you can face your fear, face the unknown, and learn to turn that into enthusiasm, now you're pursuing the unknown, and you have a great capability. And wouldn't that be nice? And you'd be able to pursue symbols in your mind. That's one of the things that makes it important. So what you're afraid of dictates part of the way that you think. And I'm going to play Celia's symbol. Because, well, after all, we're talking about a symbol in the mind.
An American soldier came home today, wrapped up as cargo in an American flag. He asked for one sweet silent symbol on his grave, but the VA gun said, "Sorry, son, request a night." Well, he served as any other with his hands and with his heart. He prayed to Father Sky, he bowed down to Mother Earth. He honored air and water and the fire he danced around. But you didn't honor him before you put him in the ground. It's a symbol, it's a sign, it stands for everything divine. Excuse me, sir, I think you're wrong. I checked it the last time I read the doctrine. It said practicing your faith is not a crime. So let this soldier rest, honor his request. You sent that little girl crying home from school, told her she was evil and she disobeyed the rules. You took away to wear their crucifix, and she knows that if you catch her, that you'll have her expelled. She's frightened every member of the family's gone to hell. She's all messed up, she's 5 years old, she doesn't know her rights, but her daddy is a lawyer, so get ready for the fight.
Oh, the rays of your chisel, of religion, the freedom to stand up and fight for what we believe in, the freedom of speech, freedom of faith.
And we're back with Ed Carell, of formerly known as Ed Hubbard, or I'm still calling as Ed the Pagan, but for most of my religious purposes, I'm moving on to the fact I'm an archpriest. I have to be honest. I have to deal with that. But in thinking like a pagan, we talked about your fear. So what it is that defines you is what you are afraid of. And the thing that the symbol song I thought did a very good job is that we're afraid of discrimination. So one of the things that pushes us as a pagan is what we fight against. It's the lowest level of our personality, but it's the easiest to grow our community based on. Let me go ahead and phrase it again. It's the lowest base of being a pagan personality. It's the idea that you have to rage against your discrimination, and it is yet the easiest part to attract people to. It has to deal with the amygdala and how we deal with fear. It is okay to be something different, but then when people don't accept you for being different, you feel like you have an automatic right to be different. Okay, in the United States, we're very fortunate because that is mostly true, especially if that is confined into a religious context. So a religious context is basically the belief in some sort of belief system. It's some sort of divine principle that the government says that it basically motivates your life. So if you're a pagan, that means whatever belief, pagan beliefs you are the main motivation of your life, that they make and direct your focus and the focus of what you do. So a lot of people, a lot of pagans, focus on being anti-Christian or giving up their faith or changing their identity from what it was to those who would discriminate against them, and they become a stereotype or a trope of the pagan way. And they do this because of the fear that people won't accept them. And generally, let us go ahead and be honest with this. If you really dig down, a lot of these people are in pain. They're in pain, so they're lashing out. And one of the ways they lash out is they adapt to paganism. And it helps them soothe some of the pain. Some of the ideas are pretty cool. But it gets to upset other people. And it's really cool to upset other people. And it makes another reason not to make a connection with other people. So one of the bases of our fundamental philosophy of thinking like a pagan is this idea of discrimination, when in fact we teach something very different. Well, first of all, one of the biggest things and the hardest thing to do is realize that you're not your body, or you are your body, whichever way you want to look at it. See, identical opposites. And what do I mean by that? The tail side of a coin is not the same as the head side of a coin, but they couldn't exist separately. If you're in a marketplace, you need a buyer and a seller. They're two different functions, but without a buyer, the seller can't sell. And so the seller, the buyer can't buy. So those are identical differences. Okay? And so in this case, the idea of being discriminated against is okay. You should just accept it. And in fact, turn it into unconditional love. Just because they don't accept you doesn't mean that you should in any way fight them or battle them. You just accept them with unconditional love. It's the identical opposite of discrimination. It's that you can discriminate against me all you want. I'm not going to discriminate against you. Now, I understand there's some principles where that can be a problem in real life, where you have a job or a home or a family or children. I'm not saying don't fight for your rights, but don't be afraid of discrimination. That's the key thing. Don't be afraid of your discrimination. You know, don't be afraid of being discriminated against. But if you're going to be discriminated against, accept it and love them and try to figure out how to communicate with them. That is a very important part. Because ultimately, in order to be free, you have to think free. And you have to be willing to think that you're going to be free. And what does that mean? If you don't think you're going to be free, and I mean this, then you won't act free. I'm not going to be allowed to do something. Therefore, I won't even think about doing it. And then if you then go, well, I'll just wait until the time is right. I'll just wait until the time is exactly right, and then I will do it. And then you go, okay, well, it's never quite the right time, but I'll wait until I got all of these other conditions set. And that's hard. That's really hard. And then you go, okay, well, maybe nobody's going to pay attention to me. Why should I do this? No one's going to pay attention to me. And they go, okay. And then you make up all these other things. So you create a prison of your own expectations. And then we have to remember, most importantly, is freedom. Yeah, your personal freedom. And I'm going to play a song for you, Spiral Rhythm, Freedom. Oh.
Hello.
It didn't play it. And that's bothersome. I'm having a little bit of trouble with the internet tonight. But and so basically, come on. Search, show all freedom. But freedom is an important part of essential. The freedom to be, to show that you're able to function is the most important thing. The freedom from fear, the freedom from love, freedom in general. Freedom is one of those things that we do. And what does freedom mean? It means the ability to function.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis, and welcome to another week of Living the Wiccan Life. This week, we're coming to you from Columbus, Ohio, in the 19th annual Universal Light Expo. And I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself, if you would, not that you would. Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world.
Wow.
Pagans Tonight is sponsored by WitchSchool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
So the gremlins are acting up on my boards today. Imagine that. And so, but freedom is an essential part of what we do. And what does freedom mean? The freedom means the ability to act on your will. The ability to act at your will. Can you think about that? That's something people don't understand. Can you act on your will? Then that means, well, what does that mean? To act on your will. Your will is your force of magic, the thing that you want inside. You know, if you're rocket energy, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go! That's your will. And it comes in lots of different forms and lots of different pieces. But it is an essential part of your identity. And what you do is you give yourself permission. Your will gives you permission to do what you do or don't do. And if you're not doing anything, it gives you permission not to do it. It tells you why things are good and why things are bad. And then that moment, that important, often forgotten moment of when you're acting on that will, that you forget, oh, I'm in charge of my will instead of the other way around. So many people live other people's lives because of it. And that's an essential part of where our identities come from. So to think like a pagan, you have to decide what things are you going to be afraid of. Well, what do you mean, be afraid of? Well, I'm going to be afraid of not trying. So I'm very afraid of that, of being bored, of not trying, of not doing. When somebody comes to you and says, Ed, why didn't you try more? I want to say, what do you mean didn't try more? I tried everything I could, and I left everything on the table. So to think like a pagan for me was like, what am I leaving on the table? What more can I do? And how can I start being afraid of not doing it? And then when I see my positive results, I go, oh, yeah, it makes sense. Like when I just started the witch school, people go, oh, no one wants a witch school. Yes, they do. I believe that. But I had no choice. I had to have the freedom of to act on it. I had to be more afraid of not doing it and how it was going to make me feel than the feeling of failure or discontent. At least I could say I tried it. On a Sunday, I have my Tearaway High program. It's going to fail. Nobody in the marketplace wanted it. You know, does that make me feel bad or good? No, it doesn't make me feel anything. It doesn't make me necessarily feel anything. It just is. And I'm able to deal with that. And because I'm able to deal with that, then I'm able to choose to try more. And more importantly, I put a lot of energy between trying things. And so what does freedom mean? The freedom to act your will, even when you're afraid. And here's Foul Rhythm with Freedom. spiral rhythm with first freedom and then I am. And it is an important part of thinking like a pagan, because here's the essential part of one of the things. So one of the things that we have been taught in our society, which is a predominantly Christian, Judeo-Christian, and even Judeo-Christian, Islamic. We are a series of book religions. And even when we're not book religion directly, we have a lot of our language and our references are tied back to those few key books that we keep using as instrumental books in our history. The Holy Bible, the Blessed Quran, the Bhagavad Gita is another example, the Torah, the first five books of Moses. We have all of these set rules and laws. Scientology has the Dianetics book. Seriously, it is a part of the same sort of dialect, the sort of code of your faith. For more modern people, Warcraft guidebook is usually useful for them. But no, in more seriousness, these holy books, these dedicated focused books, and honestly, Charles Darwin's book of Origin of the Species is amongst these. They're venerated, and they set down the idea of where the language goes. They create words that basically dictate the language around them. And so we live in this world where Adam and Eve has a real meaning, even though it's just a mythology of one religion talking about a God who puts two beings into a perfect garden and says you can have anything, but he puts a wayward spirit in them so they can have anything but that one tree. Why put it in there in the first place? And that's the idea of knowledge. And then when they finally ate from the tree, the God punished them by kicking them out of this beautiful garden. And he said, on that day that you will surely die, was he meaning metaphorically. But what they did learn after that was hunger. And so this is a mythology that most people know who Adam and Eve is. And if I make a joke about it, it was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. It becomes cultural war, right? You know exactly what I mean. If you're an American, there was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And so you know that this is a gay rights fight within the language of biblical terms. So almost everything that we have as a language reference gets back to these biblical terms. And so it's very hard to think of as a pagan until you start to deconstruct your language. So you have to realize, what's wrong with Adam and Steve? Well, God created Adam and Eve, if you believe in that mythology. But I don't believe in that mythology. I don't. I don't think there were two perfect beings. And if I did believe that, and I'll tell you, then that makes for the Elohim and Yahweh is a god of aliens, because it would be a distinct god. And even he said there were, amongst the gods that they will be like us. So he kind of mentioned it. And so the idea would be that this is an intervention where they took part of our culture and recreated it into two beings that were different from the rest of us. And we know that because Cain went out and found a wife. And one of his sons would find a whole civilization. So you can make your mythology any way you want to, but I accept the mythology or the, and some people say it's scientific theory and scientific fact, but it's still as much a religious mythology in the way it develops our language as anything, and that is Darwinism or Lemurian. We'll talk about that evolution some other time. Which was one of the early ideas that form follows function, the evolution follows function. That's true of machines, but it wasn't true of biology. And so we now have this new language, relatively new, mid-1800s, truly, to distinct our ideas that we're evolving, separate of the idea of a created universe. Very few beings actually realize that. And so when you realize that you're not a part of a created universe, but an evolving universe. You can talk about it being created in any number of ways, but can you realize, no, I live in an evolving world. It didn't start off with Adam and Eve, and Adam and Steve didn't happen. Now, there was an Adam and Steve probably somewhere along the way pretty quickly. We see it all the time. And there's probably an Adam and Eve, absolutely. There's that, and there was probably Eve and Angie, as far as we know, or Adama and Eve, So all of these ideas begin our sculpture. But as a pagan, where do we get ours? We have to say we're trying to figure out ours through our elements. So we don't have these sort of textuals. We're trying to get it from our memories, from other places. So we remember being pagan means I am pagan, hear me roar. And I'm going to take another quick break with Spirithms, I am pagan.
I am pagan, and I'm proud. I am pagan, gonna shout it loud. I am pagan, want the world to know that I follow the goddess cause she rocks my soul. Don't need your Bible, I've got the wisdom of the chrome. Don't need your heaven, into this life I'm reborn. No Ten Commandments, one fills the bill, and it harm none to what you will.
And that is Spiral Rhythm, I Am Pagan, and I am pagan and proud. And I've heard this song live a couple of times, and I really love this song. I do. I absolutely love it. It's a great song, and it has a lot to say about what it is. I am pagan, I am proud. So I started out, and I'm going to get you one more place to the base. So at the base of your personality, the base of all of our identities is fear. And we know that part of it is fear of discrimination, fear of not being accepted, fear of our identity is not as good as other people, that our holy texts, well, we don't have holy texts, we have holy libraries. How's it go? Pagans don't have holy books, they have libraries. Phaedra Bonowitz. And that's a very important part of it. So the big thing is that one thing that holds, and our language is based so deeply on the Judeo-Christian Islamic paradigm, that we don't realize we've absorbed the one thing that makes us pagan versus not being pagan. If you accept one premise above all others, then you are not able to think like a pagan because it is the most hideous crime against the pagan world. And that is, God's going to destroy it. Armageddon. apocalypse, the destruction of all things, so we can go on like it's a disposable world, like it's tissue paper, like, oh, like a kid's drawing. We drew all these people and let all these people play for a while. But, no, I'm going to sort them out at the end of it, that we have these other worlds we got to travel to. We're just such a hurry to travel to. And, well, yeah, we're just going to get rid of this one gorgeous, beautiful piece of reality. They would rather they would rather destroy what we have to sell you something that they perceive as a greater value. And that perception requires us to be in pain, in misery, in agony, in accepting a burden. Here we come from cradled crematorium. This is all we've got, and we're going to go ahead and do it. And all you're really fighting for, you know, is this idea of a heaven. And they've built it so deep into our societies that you're born and you go, oh yeah, the first thing you want to do is learn to walk and talk, and everybody's trying to get you to walk and talk. And you get soon, you're walking and talking. And then they put you in kindergarten, they structure you there, you go to church, and you know, you have to hug people, you have to start interacting with people, and you have to be behaving. So we're now in the structure, like, okay. You know, hey, what is everything, the meaning of everything? I want to go out and play. No, you need to do your homework. And then you go, okay, well, I'll get to the next grade. Oh, I graduate kindergarten. It means I get to go out and play. No, you get to go to the first grade. Oh, okay. You get to play occasionally, but no, second grade. Okay, third grade. Well, okay, when do I get to go out and play? Well, you can go to high school. In high school, you can play on the football team. No, I want to go get out of thinking like this. You're throwing all this structure at me, all of this information at me, all of this niceties of society. There's all this sin at me that I have to be dealing with. And you go, well, when do you get to play? Well, no, you get to play later. High school. Okay, great, high school. College. Oh, my God, we have to go through college? Well, college is kind of like playing, isn't it? It's not like serious place. Yeah, that's what they get us thinking. You go, all right, we get out of college, you get to go play now. No, you have all this debt you got acquired from college. Now you have to go work. Really? Yeah, you can take vacations. Well, that's not really playing. You get to play when you're done working. What does that mean? Oh, when you're 65, you get to retire. Oh, yeah, when you're 65, you get to retire. But your life has already mostly passed you by, your best times. And now you're 65 going, well, what do you do? Well, I'm really worn out and tired. I just really want to sit here. Really, what do you got to look forward to? Oh, heaven. Life after death. Really? And you never got to play here? You never got to play here? No. What's your deepest regret? That I never got to play. So what is at the heart of the pagan mindset? We are here to play. We need so very, very little. And so little really matters, that we can survive practically on nothing. Air and water and a little bit of food and a little bit of shelter and a whole lot of love is all a pagan really needs, with the idea that this world is going to continue. I might not personally continue, but this world continues on a daily basis to give us its wonder. And these religions, these idea that we just get to play, that's the only thing that's important. Not that we're racing from the cradle to the crematorium to go to some afterlife, and they're trying to race our planet through its phases so that it too dies with us, so that they can take it and say, oh, forget about it, you can't go back there. I really think that's sometimes why they don't want to. Heaven and LLM and all of them looking there, they're like, we don't want, this looks like so much fun. Earth looks like so much fun. We want to go there. No, we have to destroy it. After we're done playing, we got to destroy it. Why? Well, it's just too attractive. We don't want to have that around. It's going to be a dangerous nuisance. It could be a spiritual distraction. Can you imagine that? Yep. And so that is the biggest thing you have to understand as a pagan, that very few things matter. The air you breathe, let's hope it's clean. The water you drink, let's hope it's clean. The energy, food you put in your body, let's hope it's clean. right? Remember, you don't have energy, you generate energy. So you go take the air and the water and the food and you generate energy. That's it. That's the whole formula of life. We know that. And we interact with our environment to improve it or to disapprove it, to make it better or to make it worse. And our actions every day engage the idea that we get to play in this world and we get to engage with nature. There's very little that we need. We meet those minimum standards and we can do anything else what we want to do. Oh, and what about the end of the world? No, no end of the world. There's not, the world's not coming apart. It's not ending. You know, so stop being so silly about that and just live a really good life to play. So the first thing you're thinking, like, thinking about a pagan is to understand what you're afraid of, understand what you need deep down in your heart, and that you're afraid of things. Learn to take that fear and turn it into enthusiasm. Wow, I don't know this. This is something new. Isn't that exciting? And, you know, the same hormones, the same dopamine schedule in your brain for anxiety and enthusiasm is exactly the same. It is only a matter of the filter you put on it. And that we can go out in the world. And if you take away the idea that the world is going to end and that there is some sort of preordained orthodoxy that says, oh, yeah, the world has an expiration date. And you can go, well, maybe it doesn't have an expiration date. And if it doesn't have an expiration date, I could live for a very long time. Well, what do I want to do? And learn to play. And people ask me, what do I do for a living? You know, am I applying it? Well, I'm playing right now. It's hard work. I'm not going to kid you. I've spent a lot of time working. But I get to play in dirt all day, raising worms and playing in dirt and making soil and, you know, making people happy. It has a very serious aspect to it, but still play. And Mother Nature, Gaia, gives me that opportunity. And now this week is either, this is the first day of the full moon on Saturday, or no, Sunday, December 3rd, the moon becomes full. And following my show will be Corellian Deep Waters with the most reverend Stephanie Neal. And she'll be talking about, you know, what moves us through our depths. I'm going to play Moon is High in honor of the full moon by Spiral Rhythm again because I love them so very much. There we go. Why won't I play?
The moon is high on this night of power. The children come at the witching hour. Our hands are
the moon is high.
And that was Foul Rhythm, The Moon is High. And so, in closing, we're going to be here with Herbs of Deep Water with Most Reverend Steph Neal, the great lady Steph Neal, and she's going to be on here in just a few minutes. But I want you to remember, so one of the things we can do with our minds, with our play, the way we play, the way we do all these things, is by the way that we think about them. The most important thing you have to accept is stop being afraid of the end of the world and being afraid more of not living your life. What is more disappointing to you should be what you haven't done than what is going to happen. That's a first real step you can take to make a change. Because if you can do that, you can do amazing things. So simply, I'm going to give you a technique that really works well. Whenever you think about doing something, you have 5 seconds to make a decision to act on it. And if you do act on it, you'll say, hey, I want to do this. And so here it is. Countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Do something. And if you don't do something, you know that you're not going to want to do it. And it doesn't matter how much you want to, you'll procrastinate until forever if necessary. So do yourself a favor. Think about what it is to be pagan. Figure out what you're frightened of. And, you know, and join us. And, you know, just go ahead. And one of the things I want to leave you a thought with, join us on thedailyspell.com, which is the hub for Daily Spell. And join Witchcool, our sponsors. And remember, a lifetime membership isn't just a gift of knowledge. It's an investment in your future. And now I am going to play, to give you one moment here, A Dream Within a Dream by Brian Hankey with that thought. And as soon as you come back, you'll be back with the Most Reverend Neal. Remember, support Witch School, witchschool.com. And remember, there's a gift that you can give out to everybody, a month of free membership. Find out on our site, witchschool.com.
There's nothing showing up. Okay, there you go.
Welcome to Krillian Deep Waters. I'm your host, Reverend Stephanie Neal, and so glad that you're here with me tonight. So let's kick off this festive month with the song called, let me see here, I just had it, just lost it just that fast. Well, Bonnie Black the Hair. See you in a few minutes. Very cool. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about wildcrafting. And the main purpose for, really doing anything is the excitement of exploration. And if anyone has enjoyed feeling of turning that next corner to find something new or find something new within something very old, that curiosity, that knowing that there's still millions upon millions of things still need to be discovered. And even that can even be said with plants and trees and flowers. And one approach of many approaches when we're talking about herbs is like I like to call the wildcrafting, is that you go into the woods yourself or walk through a field or some place that has been long forgotten and that you just want to walk through and touch and smell and experience and just sit down within Mother Nature herself. And not study in such a academic sense, but studying with just delight in your heart, knowing that there may be things that are still unfound. And so with that attitude of exploration and excitement, how I usually approach herbs is that I like to take one herb at a time. In other words, let's say I have a cold or I have some kind of condition that I want to use natural herbs. And yes, I know there's beautiful, wonderful books on herbs, and I'm sure I have most of them, like everyone else does here too. But yet, a book never replaces that firsthand excitement of just discovering an herb on its own, by itself, between you and the herb, that you become a little bit of a partnership between each other. And so I don't want to take or utilize or experiment with 6 or 8 or 10 herbs. I choose to just simply use one, just one herb to really get to know. So with that, you can say, all right, I select an herb, and what can I do? How can I explore it? Well, some examples of exploring an herb is, first of all, just living with the herb, and that's an example of just culinary herbs or house plants. They could be turned into dyes or poultice, or as we all know, they can be burned as incense after dried and everything, of course. And then, of course, we can make oils out of them, balms. We can ground them and create soaps and fragrances, and we can use them for offerings. But I'm going to focus now on infusions, though, because to me, besides using dry herbs, really, because dry herbs is the simplest form to utilize the herb, infusions are super simple to make. And yes, there are many ways to make infusions, and I'm going to be giving you the simplest form of making infusions. And with infusions, you can use them just a few drops at a time, under your tongue. That is, if it's the kind that is not poisonous, or that's, before I say anything else, make sure that you do have a pre-existing condition. Make sure you always check with your physician first, so that it doesn't interfere with medications that you're already taking. And plus, it's just good advice to just run things through, and just let her or he or she let them know what you're doing, that you're just exploring a single herb, and would it be okay to do that. And so, but with infusions, you can use them as floor washes, because many times, just before I have a gathering at my temple, I will wash the floor with herbs, but utilizing a small part of infusions with that. And it just makes the energies become enlivened and just feels good. And that's one of the main things I do try to set up for the long night we have. It's a long night because we all love each other and we all have tons and tons of things to talk about and tons of things to do. So it's really important to me that when a person leaves the temple, that they leave feeling good about themselves and about lives and about the tradition and just all in all about life. So, but before I talk about infusions, I need to run through like a little bit of a warning, because there's the flowers or herbs used for medical purposes. They really do need to be researched a little, mostly because I'm talking about the poisonous ones. And yes, I know that some people use the poisonous ones, but just really be careful. Really do your research to make sure that you don't harm yourself. And so when I say wildcrafting, it is about just going into the woods and just picking herbs on your own, and really harvesting with your own hands. And plus, by harvesting your own herbs, ensures you know if there is any part of a plant or tree or a flower that is poisonous, that you picked it. You know nothing's been added to it, no additives or coloring or anything. You know because you walked through the woods and picked it yourself. But yet another little warning is that try not to pick wildflowers and herbs along the side of a road or highway, for obvious reasons. It's a safety reason, but also that all that carbon dioxide, all that passes by or by exhaust that is produced from cars will land on the dirt and will land on the plants, and then you'll get that. So that's really not a good place to pick. And like, you know, this sounds like it's work, but then this might not be your cup of tea. But this is supposed to be a delightful afternoon that you're going to go exploring. It's not an assignment or homework or something that's going to be painful unless you catch poison ivy like I have a few times. Then that's not such a pleasant experience. But that's why I bring up these little warnings, to be aware what poison ivy looks like. And most of us know that it's that three-leaved, leaves. It has three leaves. And then there's the poison oak. And there are also, let's see, with the poison oak, that's still three leaves. But that leaf is or cluster of leaves. That's more stouter, a rounder than poison ivy, and plus poison oak grows as a vine or shrub. And then, for those that like to walk along a river or a lake, then you'll run across the poison sumac, and there's such beautiful trees. And especially in the fall with the bright orange leaves, just a gorgeous tree. But they can show up as little shrubs too, and they are small trees, but they're very poisonous. And each stem consists of maybe 7 to 13 leaves arranged, and this is the key to identify them. They're arranged in pairs. This plant has the potential to cause a more severe rash than even poison ivy and poison oak. So just be real careful about that. But sumac grows in wet areas of the eastern and southwestern United States. The rash is not contagious, though. For all three of these plants disappearing from 1 to 3 weeks from contact date. So it does take a while for it to disappear off your skin. And what really makes it react to your skin, to have a little note here, and I'll probably slaughter it, and I'll just spell it out for you, is URUS, urushiol. And so anyway, so this urushiol is in these plants that cause the rash. So that's the little bugger that causes the rash. And it is not advised to burn these plants, though, because the urushiol will be released right into the air, and then it'll go all over the place, and it'll be perfect conditions to be spread all over the place. So with that, let's take a little break. Let's play Pagan Girl by Emerald Rose.
Where the world is full of women, Emma could have shipped mankind. And with this female cornucopia, it might be hard to make up your mind. I've had my share of failures, but I've learned a thing or two. Sing them for you. I'm gonna find myself a pagan girl. circle like the sun and moon, and dance round the fire to a goddess tune. Rock all night till the morning, a pearl's gonna find myself a pagan girl. Back in college, Mary was a needy pie, and as fine as any you have seen, but she plucked for the god and the goddess if they didn't wear a pink and green. And Belinda, she was a wild girl. She could dance, she could ride, and she could scream. But the only god she adored and served were Mary Jane and old Jim Beam. I'm gonna find myself a pagan girl who understands the goddess and rocks my world. Chant in the circle as the sun and the moon, and dance round the fire to a goddess tune. Rock all night to the morning, a pearl's gonna find myself a pagan girl. Now, Sherry was a fine, sweet girl, and her happiness was her goal. But she had one very big problem with me. I would not let her save my soul. And then it was a new age, mystic, dolphins, angels, crystal dreams. But her idea of a wild good time was sailing from the Pleiades. I'm gonna find myself a pagan girl who understands the goddess and rocks my world. Chant in the circle like the sun and the moon, and dance round the fire to a goddess tune. Rock all night till the morning, a pearl's gonna find myself a pagan
going to be explaining to you the little instructions about how to create an infusion. And now remember, as you're exploring with this particular herb that you're going to discover in the woods, or let's say you're not the kind that likes to walk through the woods, well then just purchase an herb from a trusted herb garden owner that really respects the plants. And so let's say you've selected a particular herb, and know right then and there that every herb, like everything, desires to work with you and has a consciousness, has a higher self, is a total beautiful being just like you. So with just knowing that, there instantly becomes a healthier respect for them, and you begin to see them with different eyes, and knowing that they vibrate beautifully when they are, well, you pay attention to them, and the more attention you give them, the higher their vibration rises. And so there you have another thing to explore, and you can use these energies as your reading for a quarant when you're working with the tarot, or if you're working with spirits as a medium, or your rituals, or chanting, or dancing, or just being, or in meditation. It's just not about consuming the herb or smelling the herb, but living with the herbs and recognizing how their energies change, just like ours, our energy changes. All right, so back to the infusions. So you have an herb, and then, so the first thing you do is you thoroughly wash the herb, and you thoroughly wash your own hands, too, before you touch the herb, after they're already cleaned. And then place 1 ounce of the herb inside a 1 ounce mason jar. And this doesn't have to be an exact science, of course, but you pretty much just try to get as much of that herb inside the mason jar. Then you boil some water, and you pour the boiling water over the herb, filling the mason jar to the top. Then naturally you place the lid on the jar, place the jar on a flat surface, and steep 4 hours, or I usually just keep it overnight. Then strain the herb, which is not too much fun until you really get the knack of it. What I usually do is when I strain the herb out of the large jar stainless bowl. I know some people don't like to use stainless, and others say, yes, use stainless, but whatever you choose, a stainless or wooden bowl, I use both. But those, there are some that say do not use a wood or plastic bowl due to both hold the herbs' smells even after washing. So that is a good point. That it just retains that aroma inside of that. So with straining, just like a cheesecloth, I just dump it all. I put a cheesecloth right over a larger bowl. Throw the herb that's been steeping overnight into the cheesecloth, and then I just squeeze out all the. And then it's usually a black. And then I just return the liquid back to the mason jar or maybe a pitcher. But it's pretty dark. You know, well, I really can't say it's pretty dark every time because there are some herbs that it almost looks like it's a very light tea. But then you'd be really surprised that some of them are dark. And it's just amazing that you'd never think that they would get that dark. And so now your infusion is ready to refrigerate. And this is where you experiment in that, once again, you've only selected an herb that you know for sure that it's not poisonous and that it is that it can, in fact, be ingested. And then experiment that. Take just maybe a few drops under your tongue. At first, and just see the vibrations, how it reacts to your body, or maybe use it as a few drops in a with your tea or coffee, or add it to your food. Feed to the earth too, like maybe sprinkle some on the dirt, because the dirt itself is a highly living, exciting organism all unto itself. Well, it's an organ that has millions and millions of organisms inside the organ, which I guess that really explains everything anyway. So just knowing that, just experiment, just like when you first learn Reiki and when you first learn how to utilize candles and even with the tarot, when you first were discovering the myriad of ways that you can use the tarot. So it's just an enjoyable experimentation you know, with the herbs. All right. So, with that, I'm going to be playing Roots of Oak Duree and Water Sprite.
When from the north brings with it a chill, I owe the heaven off of the hill, just begun is my journey, and Danu my name. I am the juggler, sweet juggler of fortune and fame. Let me in a bite, fingers and logic, sing what I adore, legend and magic. Let me in a bite, fingers and logic, sing what I adore, legend and magic. Let me in a bite, fingers and logic, sing what I adore, legend and magic. Blessed Mother,
as black as night sky. Can fly. Let me hear the facts, bigger than logic. Be what I allure, legend and magic. Let me hear the facts, bigger than logic. Be what I allure, legend and magic. Let me hear the facts, bigger than logic. Be what I allure, legend and magic. Let me hear the facts, bigger than logic. Be what I allure, legend and magic.
And as we continue, I want to share a couple of the herbs that may interest you. And one herb is called the linden leaf. And the linden leaf, its medicinal uses is, it's an anti-inflammatory, which means something on or in your body that is swollen or hot or red. It's also good for colds and a flu remedy. And the directions for that is only use 0.5 ounce weight measurements for a cut herb in 2-quart mason jars. So you don't use very much of this. You can see how you just need very little and lots and lots of water to go with this. And this herb tends to be really slimy too when with the cut version of the herb, not so much with the whole plant, the linden. Then there's the boldo, and that's medicinal uses, is it's a sedative and contains boldine, which stimulates the flow of bile and gastric juices, and it promotes the excretion of uric acid. It's said that it helps sluggish liver function, and once again, anything related to any kind of organs, check with your physician. That's, you know, but it says that it helps with rheumatism, and let's see, there's the cat's claw, medicinal purposes. Well, in fact, it's legendary for diabetes, and they say that this particular herb has been used for over 2,000 years, and it's supposed to be good for rheumatism, arthritis, gastric ulcers. And then there's mint spearmint. Its uses is indispensable culinary herb. A few leaves added to that pot can sweeten and some tea. And in fact, the word mint is derived from the Greek legend of a nymph named Nympha, who inspired the jealousy of a goddess and was transformed to a lowly plant, so-called lowly plant, with an exquisite scent. While spear derives from the plant's pointed leaves, in other words, the name itself is descriptive of what shape it forms. So, and yet those few herbs that I just mentioned now, know that you can go ahead and get a book on these plants, and there's tons and tons of more information about all of them, but just recognize that I'm not talking about being like earning a master's in herbology. This is just very organic, natural, enjoying what you find as you move along in life, and have fun as you're enjoying and learning about each plant yourself. And even as a decorative object in your home or office, that can be very beneficial too. So I want to leave you with one thing. Since we are in the season of giving, I want to suggest to you that since this is really a part of the reason why we live every day, is that in fact we are gifts to the world, and as gifts, what do? But we give. And how can we give? Well, we give in a multitude of ways every day of our lives. Sometimes we are a gift to another human or an animal or a plant, and not realize that in fact we are the gift to those that surround us and as we surround them. And yet there is one good gift that you may consider, and that's giving the gift to maybe a person that doesn't understand, maybe a friend or family member that truly doesn't understand your way of living, maybe being pagan and Krillian and Wicca, that they just don't understand it. Well, maybe you might want to consider giving that family member or friend a membership to witchful.com and let them see for themselves and let them read for themselves why you enjoy and have chosen this path. And it will be a real eye-opener to them to see that now I understand my friend and my family member, maybe just a little more. And of course, there's lots of other ways to express that, in fact, your belief system is something to be proud of and a lovely way to live, because it is. And it has been lovely spending time with all of you tonight. Until next time, blessed be.
Build his castles tall, green man, king of the world. do not grieve. Green man, wild man, wise one. Life and death, an endless chain. Green man, king of the wood. All that falls will rise again. Green man, wild man, wise one. Green man, blessed wood. Oak and ash and thorn. In green man's brotherhood, all will be reborn. All will be reborn. Green man, blessed wood. Oak and ash and thorn. In green man's brotherhood, all will be reborn. All will be reborn. All will be reborn.
Listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.